Welcome to another edition of The Spirit Revolution. My name is Philip Coppens.
And my name is Kathleen McGowan.
And today's topic is UFOs, unidentified flying objects. And I would like to say they're unidentified. So what are we going to talk about? Well, we are going to talk about so many things. And just at the start of the program, let me just say that this is kind of like an introduction to the UFO phenomenon, because we're going to try and get some other people on, including a very good friend of mine, Mark Pilkington, in the upcoming weeks. So, Kathleen, why are we talking about UFOs today?
Well, first of all, to your point, it is about unidentified flying objects, not necessarily about aliens, and that's one of the distinctions that we want to make. A lot of these things that we talk about, I think we tend to lump UFOs, aliens, all into the same category. And I think that we're talking about something that is broader than that. I think that we're talking about light phenomenon. I think that we're talking about things that we can't identify in the sky, and things that are anomalous to us, or things that are strange. And I think that that's a really broad category, and that's what we're going to get into. And you're the expert on this, so I'm actually going to probably be asking you a lot of questions, because I think you have done so much research on this, and of course you've been involved with Ancient Aliens, the series on the History Channel. And so I think that we need to talk about these distinctions, you know, aliens versus UFOs, when those categories overlap and when they don't. And the reason that we are talking about this today is one of the things that we have realized, you know, over the last month, certainly with the success of Ancient Aliens, with the amount of mail and interaction that you have with people who are fascinated by this whole concept of the UFO phenomenon. But also one of the things we have come to see is that everyone has had some kind of an experience. No, we're not talking about alien abductions and that kind of thing. Although, according to Fatburger, and a poster on Fatburger, 5% of all Americans claim to have had some kind of alien encounter or abduction experience. So, you know, I don't know if we can take Fatburger as definitive research, but that was what their poster said anyway. Anyway, everyone pretty much that I know at some stage has had some kind of experience where they have seen something that they could not explain. And that's essentially our jumping off point today, is what are these experiences like? How do they impact us? Where do they take us? What do they make us think about? And the reason specifically we decided to do this is because my 9-year-old son saw something very, very interesting this week, and it got us to thinking, okay, now it's time to talk about it.
Absolutely. And yes, I mean, to just kind of do the 4% of Americans who think they have been abducted by aliens, it goes back actually to, I think, the early 1990s, when Bud Hopkins, who was one of the people who kind of like was one of the people who felt that the missing time which certain people experienced was actually when they had been abducted. And he was involved with something called the Roper Poll, which then created the Roper Report. And they were the ones who said that based on the amount of people they had interviewed, up to 4 or 5% of the American population might be a UFO abductee. Now, that's a very kind of you know, big statement to make from the kind of questions they were asking, I think about 1,100 or so Americans at the time. But yes, the UFO field is so phenomenal, and it's so interesting. And whenever you read books about UFOs, there's this standard line about how Kenneth Arnold, on June the 24th of all dates, 1947, saw 9 flying objects near Mount Rainier in Washington State. And then everybody jumped on that. And then it's, you know, believed that on Independence Day of the, obviously the 4th of July, 1947, the famous, now famous, crash at Roswell happened, and that there were aliens. And then the government began this big conspiracy, which to this very day is in place. Well, that's something which is kind of like a conclusion to the UFO phenomenon. If you have been born or become interested in this field in like the last few years or so, but that's definitely not the case even in 1947. For example, the Roswell case didn't feature anywhere on a UFO book or on the UFO phenomenon field of interest up until the late 1970s. The Kenneth Arnold thing, even though it's widely reported in 1947, there are definitely UFO sightings before. The books will sometimes tell you that, like, at the end of the Second World War, there were unidentified flying objects. But really, people have always been seeing anomalous lights in the sky. And when you go into the Celtic fairy stories, you will see strange fairy lights in the distance and fairy phenomenons. Fatima, a light phenomenon of such tremendous interest, which was interpreted at that time as an apparition of the Virgin Mary, because at that moment in time, all of these light phenomena were connected with the Virgin Mary or Catholic features. There's a series of three books, which actually has recently reinterpreted, with a stretch, the Fatima apparitions as a UFO phenomenon, as extraterrestrials somehow talking to the three people who saw a very special event happening in Fatima. Jacques Vallée, who's one of the principal UFO researchers and whose career is instrumental for Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters of the French Kind, the character of the French scientist was largely based on him. He has written a phenomenal book, I think it was at the end of the 1960s, 68, I think, called Passport to Magonia, in which he highlighted that there was a bishop, I think it was Agobard of Lyon, who really had a UFO experience, if you want. Who saw people coming from the clouds and talking to the people around him, and saying that if they wanted to, they could come with them to a magical country called Magonia. And this was, in the Lyon region of France. So these stories of meeting remarkable lights have been around for hundreds of years, and they have always variously been interpreted. It's really, I think, the UFO age as we know it since 1947, I think, is extraterrestrial in nature, because that's when we began to interpret it as extraterrestrial rather than anything else, rather than fairies or Virgin Mary stuff.
Okay, now this is where I am conflicted. And this is where I sometimes get a little bit irritated with the whole UFO thing. As you know, and our beloved adopted brother Giorgio, from Ancient Aliens, we have had these conversations at length. We've discussed them on the show before in Ancient Aliens, the Ancient Aliens episode, and in a few other episodes, that I sometimes get upset and annoyed with this idea that everything is extraterrestrial. But because I tend to feel that it takes the mysticism away from us. So when we start saying that angelic experiences or visitation experiences that are connected to the Virgin Mary or another saint or whatever, we start to say that all of those things are UFOs, I start to get a little bit upset. However, that said, I think that what we need to do is look at what our definition of extraterrestrial is. You know, when Giorgio says on Ancient Aliens that Joan of Arc is getting her messages from aliens, I absolutely do not agree with that. But are angels extraterrestrial characters? You know, that's where we come down to definition. Extraterrestrial means outside of the earth, not of this earth. Well, angelic forces are not of the earth. These forces that are communicating with the children of Fatima or Bernadette and Lourdes are not necessarily terrestrial, right? They are coming from something else. But does that mean that they're not divine? Are these things mutually exclusive? Do all these things live together? I mean, this is the question that I think is really interesting here. You know, I get upset when it's black and white baby bathwater. It's either aliens or God, and there's no in between. You know, Fatima is fascinating because what happens during that final apparition in Fatima is this dancing sun. You know, this dancing sun in the sky where the sun is moving around and 60,000 people witness this extraordinary phenomenon, this light show that by all accounts was absolutely, you know, an exquisite, magical, life-changing thing to witness. Was that God? Was that an alien? Was that extraterrestrial? I don't know. But I go back to this idea that extraterrestrial must mean something broader, kind of in the Jodie Foster context sense, is, you know, it partially. But where are you with that? Where do you come into this idea of how these things intersect?
Well, yes, I mean, the traditional point of view is in a black and white world, something happened or didn't happen. And that's very much like the, you know, the extraterrestrial interpretation is very something for this day and age, whereby in this day and age, everything has to be within time and space. There's no room for magic. It's very all literal. So what the UFO phenomenon does, it's like whereas people say, oh, there's no such thing as a UFO phenomenon. It's all misunderstanding. All of these people are stupid. The UFO people kind of like say, no, they're not. And the people who wrote the Bible are not. These are real events. They just have been misinterpreted. It's not divine. It's, you know, that there's no such thing as another reality. They just came from somewhere else within this reality, a foreign planet. And they're just visiting us here. So it's this kind of like materialistic view. And it's kind of like interesting. It's like, it's still skepticism, but it's not a skepticism. Not as skeptical as the standard skeptic, if that makes sense. These are people who do want to have some kind of expansion of reality, but not beyond the borders of the material world. They don't want to go into this divine aspect. And I think that that's fundamentally more of a sociological problem which we're facing at the world as a whole. These people, you know, they're very much, like, if you were to do it black and white, they're more on the side of the skeptics than on the people who really open to new possibilities, because they still can't accept this idea that whatever the UFO phenomenon is completely maybe of a magical dimension of an otherworldly reality of a divine aspect. So that is one thing. Now, where do I stand? I think the UFO phenomenon is extremely complex. You also are faced with the fact that the UFO phenomenon, and Mark Pilkington is probably going to talk more about that, that what we have today as this view that somehow the American government would know everything and that disclosure of the truth of extraterrestrial life is just around the corner, if only a president would be powerful enough to stand up to the own internal forces of his government so he can do this kind of like, you know, this conspiracy kind of thing. I don't buy that, and it's largely fabricated, and Mark will go into that, and it's something which on my page, if you go to philipcoppens.com and you click on memes and you go to the UFO Gate episode of that, you will see that a lot of this is kind of like fabricated, specifically by the intelligence community, because some of these UFO sightings, including Roswell, happened around areas where there was tremendous technology going on. Like when Roswell was supposed to have happened was also when the only planes who had nuclear bombs on them were flying out of Roswell. So you would think that there is some kind of system there in place whereby a press release saying, hey, we just had a crash of a UFO, is going to go through some channels, and just kind of saying, oops, you know, like this is real. Just accepting that is just so almost ludicrous. But to kind of like, is it extraterrestrial? Is it angelic? I am very much of the opinion that that what is happening in the UFO phenomenon is twofold. And actually, the standard extraterrestrial one doesn't really feature in those two things. One of them is anomalous lights, in which I would put Fatima. You know, it's not Fatima really wasn't flying. It wasn't a UFO sighting as such. It was a strange light which was seen, which obviously communicated to the people involved, with then a gigantically beautiful and, as you say, life-changing light show afterwards involving the sun, a solar display. That is obviously something which fits into precisely what it is, and then the question is, was this the Virgin Mary or something, another kind of, you know, messenger there? But it's also very clear that there's something more interesting going on. And this is something which has been explored by the likes of Paul Devereux, who actually found that tectonic stress on the Earth sometimes creates light phenomenon, and that gigantic UFO sightings quite often precede major earthquakes because of the tectonic stress which is being created. But that light which is created interacts with us, and that it gives us, that it interacts with our brain. But that there's also another category of these light phenomenon whereby you can pretty much kind of come to the conclusion that this light is actually intelligent, that there is something going on there, that this is something which is intelligent and not even of an extraterrestrial nature, but of a terrestrial nature, that this is some kind of other species, other kind of intelligence is probably the best way of putting it, living on this earth and able to interact with us. I think, and that is where the Celtic fairy tradition comes in. And I think, you know, that if you were to ask what that intelligence is, then I actually think that the Celtic fairy explanation is probably the best one we have so far on the books, rather than trying to reinterpret the Celtic fairy explanation as saying, oh no, these Celts just misunderstood the fact this is all about ET. So it's a very complex subject, and it is complex because the UFO field really covers anything which is anomalous and which is seen flying. You know, that is such a broad category, that it is really, really extremely hard to come up with just a single explanation for such a broad sweep of possibilities.
Well, you know, you're speaking my language when you start talking about the Celts. And as a Celtic girl myself, and as someone who has spent a significant amount of my life in Ireland, I have had many, many experiences there that I've never had anywhere else. So you have to also ask yourself, are there places where this is more prevalent? Now, the experience I've had in Ireland are very different, and I do tend to think of them as terrestrial, if otherworldly. I don't know if that entirely makes sense, but rather than, you know, alien contact, you have a sense of being in contact with other terrestrial, like you said, things who live on the earth that maybe we just don't, you know, see, or which are not, I don't know entirely how to explain it, but, you know, the Irish have, going all the way back for thousands of years, have this idea of the veil, of the sense that there is another world connected to ours just on the other side. For those people who have never lived in a Celtic environment, that might sound crazy, but when you live there, you not only get it, you experience it, you feel it. You are in this constant place of knowing there is something just on the other side of you that is this place where time and history and everything kind of comes together. So, you know, I have, and all of my children have, seen things flying in Ireland. And of course there it's always, well, it's some kind of fairy culture. Now, do you see something clearly with little wings flying around? No. But you do see these orbs of light, not the kind of orbs that you get on camera, but I mean real balls of light that, you know, come in. And this is not bog gas, because you'll hear that too. Oh, well, it's bog gases. It's this kind of thing. It's nothing like that. These are very, very specific little points of light that fly around at night in certain parts, and that usually is, you know, way, way out in the country. I've seen this in really big numbers in Dingle, in the Dingle Peninsula, and also in the area around County Cavan, in the sort of northern central part of the country, really way out in the farmlands. And, you know, this is territory that's not, you know, super urbanized yet. And please God, you know, won't be anytime soon. But as a result, I think that there is some kind of connection out there into the country to this phenomenon. And what is it? It's unidentified.
Well, I mean, it's and it actually touches upon this gigantic question, which the skeptics always say, like, you know, well, if there's anything to the UFO phenomenon, why are they abducting people in far off places in the middle of nowhere? Kentucky quite often is used there. And why don't they just land on the White House front lawn? The joke of UFO researchers is that they're looking for intelligence and that they wouldn't find it on the White House front lawn. But the kind...
No, that was the joke when the Bush administration was in office.
Okay. And the underlying thing is that, yes, a lot of these UFO abductions, which kind of, you know, are now part and parcel of the UFO phenomenon, the so-called close encounters of the fourth kind, are people who are just ordinary people anywhere. But again, it's when you start looking at these UFO abductions and see what is happening, today we interpret that as a visitation from an extraterrestrial being. But Jacques Vallée, when he looks at that, he kind of like will tell you that there is no description or no difference whatsoever between an abduction to the fairyland. Because even kind of like, you know, where I come from, Scotland, there are beautiful legends in the border region where they are describing these things whereby people were walking about one night in the middle of nowhere and they came across this person and they took him with him to the fairy realm. And even though it felt like he had been gone for just a few hours, he actually had gone for years. And when he returned, so that's like an episode of Missing Time, whereby somebody has been abducted to somewhere else by an intelligence and then later returned. And again, in the modern UFO abduction researcher, who is Bud Hopkins comes to mind most clearly, will tell you, no, the Celts, the Scots completely misunderstood this. This is some kind of alien technology, which they did, and they have been here far longer than we anticipated, than we thought they were abducting human beings. And this is all part and parcel of ETs doing these things with humans. It's not that simple. I had the privilege of knowing for a brief period of time John Mack. And I love John for the fact that he put himself on the line there. He was a Harvard professor, Pulitzer Prize winner, who at the, you know, in his 60s spoke out so vehemently that he made almost a cover of Time. He made Time. He became, you know, Harvard tried to take away tenure from him because of what he was saying. And the only thing he was saying was this, that people who were relating UFO abduction stories were not inventing these events, that they were that their reaction to this was like any other trauma victim, that they were traumatized by this, and therefore that the implication was that what they had been subjected to was definitely something which they experienced was real, and under normal circumstances would therefore be real as well. He did not say this was ET, and in fact, John was one of those people who was trying to change this very narrow thing. And I actually wrote an article in a bulletin which existed in Canada at the time, which was done by a doctor who was being confronted with people who were coming to him and saying, hey, I'm a UFO abductee. And he kind of said, and what do you expect me to do about that? So he began to kind of give a little magazine, which kind of was health, which was aimed at the kind of like the health, the medical industry, in kind of like what to do. And I made a comparison that Bud Hopkins and John Mack, who were like the dominating forces of UFO abduction research, were a bit like Freud and Jung. You know, they knew each other. They were friends, but they had extremely different interpretations of what really was going on. And Bud Hopkins definitely is Freud. Saying that all of this is real and that they are genetically experimenting with people and that is all that is going on. John Mack didn't believe that at all. He felt that what we in the West were experiencing as a UFO abduction was really something which happened everywhere in the world, in every culture, and that in the West, what in Celtic countries would be a fairy explanation, what Native Americans would describe as another spirit coming in liaison with, that this was in the West within the framework of the West interpreted as extraterrestrial, but that really that something else was going on. And Jung, interestingly enough, when he actually wrote a book about UFOs in 1958, and he said that UFO phenomenon was really something which kind of was an archetype, that it was something which was always there, and that in the West, was being interpreted as extraterrestrial, because in the West we are materialistic, and that's therefore the thing which is going to be given at. But that this was something which was typical of every culture for mankind since its early beginnings, and that what is kind of like, you know, like that it, if we were to interpret this within a non-Western framework, that what is going on is that these people were invited to kind of like have an experience of the divine, sometimes by accident, because they found themselves in the middle of nowhere where you would have the Celtic thing, or that some of these people really were special in the sense that, you know, they had this special ability, if you want, to be able to interact with this other intelligence. But that this specialness in the West specifically wasn't really experienced as something divine, because it was being done within the framework of, oh, it's just ETs doing stuff, you are a victim. And this is something I think which is actually the biggest difference between the work of Bud Hopkins and John Mack. Bud was very much, and is still very much, of the opinion that a UFO abductee is somebody who's been subjected to this. It's genetics, it's DNA, and the aliens are after your DNA, and that's it. John Mack was not at all like that, and in his book, his first book, I have forgotten the name, but it was a man from Puerto Rico, who I briefly corresponded with, and he was an artist, and he made it very clear that his view of abductions had nothing to do with that, and he just considered them to be part and parcel of his development as an artist, and that it helped him challenge things, but also transform it. And some of the other people John Mack spoke with definitely felt that as well, that whatever was going on in their lives, that the UFO experiences they had with these intelligences were very much there as a help, as a catalyst to move them to the next level of their personal development. So, you know, it's one person, and in some cases, one person who had been speaking to Bud Hopkins and John Mack, but the researcher putting the framework on and making something which is so wide and so potentially interesting. And when you slap it's just ET abducting people, it's a very narrow definition of something which is far more interesting and far more wide-ranging than that.
But, okay, help me with some clarifications here. So was John Mack actually saying that he believed these people had been physically taken by an alien intelligence or an extraterrestrial intelligence and been somewhere and then returned? Is that what he was saying?
He's in some occasions, yes, that's what he's been saying, but then there are also very clear examples, even in Bud Hopkins's case, where you will see that what he is describing, and even what the hypnotized person is describing, as saying, well, I saw my physical body still on the couch, and somehow I disappear into this wall, and I went, into the alien spaceship. And you would kind of say, okay, but, and explain that one to me then, from a purely materialistic point of view. So there are examples where it's kind of assumed that the missing time actually involved a physical removal, if you want, of the body as well. But it's definitely not the case in every story you read in about UFO abductions. It's, you know, I wouldn't put a percentage on it. I would kind of say, you know, 20 in the find and then 40-40 the other way, divided over those two possibilities. But again, there's no uniformity there. It's very much like, again, within the Celtic realm, you had, you know, fairy visitations which were kind of like, which went nowhere. They just saw some anomalous creature and that was the end of it. Some of them disappeared and then returned. Some of them were gone for years. And even again in the fairy mythology, or sorry, the fairy lore, you have the story of hybrid children, the changelings, which is again something which you see coming across in the UFO thing. So to me, like, the UFO phenomenon in 2011 is very much a reduction of something extremely interesting, extremely real, but interpreted in a very narrow Western mindset of, oh, this is all ET from an extraterrestrial world, and that's the answer.
But don't we also have to be careful not to go from anomalous light to alien abduction? I mean, that's where I think we get into trouble. I think that we get into trouble when we say it's all this. I think there are so many categories here. There are so many categories of possibilities. And I think it's an and universe. I don't think it's either or. I think all of these things can potentially happen. I personally have a really hard time with the whole concept of nuts and bolts spaceships and people being taken onto them. It does not work for me. I'm not discounting anyone else's experience. I'm just saying I have not yet seen or heard of anything like that that really convinces me. Again, I'm all about the Jodie Foster contact experience. But, you know, that works for me. But I also think it's really interesting that there is a huge percentage of the Western population who does not buy God, does not buy angels, does not buy fairy mythology in Celtic countries, but is totally comfortable with all of it being aliens. You know, I mean, that's amazing to me why that becomes easily explainable, whereas everything else is, you know, immediately written off as being silly. So skeptics come in all shapes and sizes in this world. But you have even said to me, when we've had these discussions, you have said to me on a number of occasions, well, you know that just because you're seeing some kind of fantastic light in the sky doesn't mean it's a nuts and bolts spaceship and we're not talking about aliens. So, I mean, I'd like you to kind of expand on that idea.
Well, yeah, the nuts and bolts spaceship, you know, if you think you saw a nuts and bolts spaceship, then, and you kind of, you think that's actually the logical explanation for what you've seen, then you probably saw that. But it's probably not extraterrestrial. It's probably something which, you know, your government has been developing. And your government, if you're listening to the show in America, if you're living somewhere else, it's the U.S. government. And that's kind of clearly the case. You can see examples of where, you know, the American government has been testing things. And you have to remember that an awful lot of these spaceships and flying machines in the 1950s and 60s were experimental and were also meant to be part of the war, the Cold War. And they didn't want people in America to know what they were for a variety of reasons, but also they didn't want people within the American military to know, because they wanted to test how military personnel would react to some of the things they were flying, because that reaction they could then say, oh well, that's how the Soviets will do that as well, so if we put on this thing. And there's like tremendously interesting things when you start looking into the what became known as the Bay of Pigs fiasco in 1961 in Cuba. When you look at the planning stage of what they were trying to do there, there is at one point something whereby the American government is saying, okay, so we're going to invade Cuba, and what we're thinking we're going to do is this: we're going to make it appear to the Cubans as if Jesus is walking on water. And then kind of, you know, everybody will come to that. And then what they won't realize is that it's actually the American fleet kind of coming to shore. And the Cubans will be so flabbergasted by all of this that they'll just be kind of like, you know, easily takeable. And you kind of go, hold on, you're saying you can create this kind of sound and light show that the entire Cuban population who lives near shores will think it's Jesus? That's kind of like interesting technology, specifically, you know, as early as the 1960s. Things like Blackbird and the U2 are definitely known to have been mistaken for UFOs. You know, Blackbird could fly up to Mach 3, which is 3,200 miles per hour, if I'm not mistaken. That was, 1960s technology. This was within years of having a jet engine, so to speak. So extrapolate that to the present, and there is obviously certain stuff which, as experimental craft, the American government have been trying to develop, and there is secrecy layers around that which are in place for decades, and 50 years from now we will know certain things. So all of this to kind of like say, are there nuts and bolts things out there which are flying around? The answer is yes, but they are, there are some of them, and they are very specific, and it's a minority of the UFO cases which are being reported. They're not your standard thing which you will see flying over Los Angeles, for example. The majority of UFO phenomenon are really anomalous lights in the sky, which are, by default, anomalous, which are UFOs, and who are of a far less interesting nature, or less spectacular nature, if you want, than the, oh, we, the big stories which make movies, which kind of like, are 15,000 people saw this thing flying over Phoenix, kind of like in 1997, that kind of stuff, or the things that, like the Gulf Breeze sightings in the early 1990s. Those things are spectacular and probably have a more nuts and bolts background to it, but you wouldn't really want to go, I think, to an extraterrestrial explanation for that. By and large, the bog standard UFO sighting of, oh, I saw something anomalous flying in the sky, probably comes back to a more like there is something else on this earth, another intelligence, and quite often, again, a close encounter of the first kind is just something which you see flying and you have no interaction with whatsoever. It is just kind of like, almost as if that other intelligence would be just doing its business because it's just there and it's sharing, maybe not this dimension as 100% part of it, but definitely on some occasion comes within this dimension, and can be seen as such. So I kind of like hope that kind of somewhat explains the question, because it's a very complex question to just answer in like a few words.
No, it's well, the whole everything about this question is complex. There are so many aspects to it because, a lot of the things that the skeptics will say, and again, skeptics are great at the blanket explanation. The blanket explanation covers everything, and, let's not talk about the rest of it. Because the blanket explanation that we hear most frequently is it's American military. It's an American military test, it's some kind of secret thing we're not supposed to know about. And I have no problem with that because I'm absolutely certain that that is likely. I have lived in the state of California for most of my life. And we are surrounded by military bases. We're surrounded by desert. So does it surprise me that there have been enormous numbers of first kind encounters in California? Absolutely not. There are thousands upon thousands of reports in California of people seeing things that they cannot explain in the sky. Now, I think that can be two reasons. I think it can be because some of it has been military, absolutely. And I have certainly seen some very strange things here in the sky in my life, and I'm pretty certain that some of them were military, but maybe not all of them. And the other question I have is, but isn't also there's an interesting connection to me towards some of these things happening in what is potentially sacred ground. We were just made aware by one of our Facebook friends, Mary Bennett, about books written about UFOs over Topanga Canyon, which is just a few miles away from us here. This entire region where we live is sacred Indian territory going back thousands of years. And there have certainly been a lot of anomalous lights, within, say, a 20-mile radius of where we are. And so there are entire books about it. And so we're going to do some more investigation into that and hopefully maybe get the author on and talk about some of those things. But to me, it's like, okay, well, this is sacred ground. So where did these concepts intersect? Is it sacred ground? Is sacred ground because the ancients recognize it as a powerful place? Is it a powerful place because of energetics, because it's a vortex, because it's a place where it's easier to communicate with, other worlds or other intelligences? How do these things come together?
Yeah, I think the short answer to your question is yes. There's clearly the case that when we go to places like Brittany or Cornwall or Ireland, places of the veil, it's because these two dimensions come together. And, we are humans, so we will write our history from a human perspective. And the human perspective will be that Druids and other mists came to these areas because they felt that the veil was light there and you could pass into the other dimension. Well, guess what? So if you're in another dimension and you're an intelligence there, they will report that in those places it's easier for them to come into our reality and that they can walk around there. And so when you start comparing notes of somebody from a druid, let's go with the druid example, of saying, okay, I went to this place and I was able to access this realm and I stayed there for a brief period of time and then I came back into my body. Well, switch that around and somebody from another dimension might be saying, well, I managed to get into that dimension and I kind of like looked around a bit and then I came back. That person or that entity in this reality might have been seen as a light. And guess what? That wouldn't be so strange because we hear examples of even, shamans and ghostly kind of phenomenon of disembodied minds, human minds, who have clearly a reaction to light phenomenon as well. And again, what Paul Devereux was saying is that, and what also the Celtic lore is clear in saying, is that contact with these light phenomenon has a direct effect on the brain, that there is a connection there, that somehow this light is either intelligent and or is able to do certain things to the brain to make it go slightly in a different kind of operating mode. So that's kind of like the extended answer to yes, there are sacred areas where these things tend to happen more. And they might be sacred for a variety of reasons. It might be that there is something physical on a geophysical level that enables this thing. Like, sacred places like Iona, there's crystals. It's like a crystal island. There are areas which are known for their magnetism. There are areas known for their iron content. All of these things are known to interact with our brains. So, our mind just isn't a standalone entity. We do interact with our immediate natural environment. And that natural interaction might actually lead to very interesting non-material, non-physical events happening.
All right, so all of these things bring us to these different interpretations of phenomenon. So my next question for you is a little more entertaining, I think, in that Hollywood has taken on these ideas over the last 50 years, from the sublime to the ridiculous. So what films do you think do the best job of exploring these ideas? What do you think are the must-sees? And are there conversely films that have really pissed you off because you feel like they have taken this idea and done something with it that is really out of the realm of what you think is not just realistic but acceptable? Like for me, I don't like the scare tactic alien invasion movies. Okay. I am not a War of the Worlds fan. Is it entertaining? Maybe. But I think anything that leads to this kind of fear-mongering, we're going to be invaded by aliens and, they're just here to use us as zombies. I'm not a fan of any of that stuff. I don't think that really sort of progresses anybody mentally, spiritually, or emotionally. So my question for you is twofold. What do you think are the best films that have been made about UFOs and aliens and why? And what do you think are the worst?
Well, amongst the worst is definitely The Fourth Kind, which kind of came out about a year and a few months ago, because it pretends to be real. It pretends that this woman living in Alaska is really hypnotizing these people and the entire town is subjected to this, and they're all starting to commit suicide. And it paints this very realistic picture of kind of like saying, if you think you have some kind of missing time, the next thing you're going to do is either commit suicide or become a mass murderer. And it's like, get real. So I think that's actually a very dangerous movie. And I'm kind of like happy that it didn't do as well as it might have done. And it has this really kind of like this pretendy real life marketing behind it of like everything you see in here is real. Well, it doesn't. Like you, I adore Contact. Carl Sagan was a very complex man, and there are certain things Carl did in his life which I'm not a big fan of. But with Contact, which came out just after he had died, I kind of like say that like Carl in death did more than he ever was able to do alive, because he had a very reductionist point of view to anything to do with the paranormal, not just the UFO phenomenon as such. But with Contact, he really let himself go, and kind of with the influence of a woman there as well, his wife, who helped him to kind of like make sure that his vision became real even after he had died. It was a wonderful movie. E.T., of course, because it is very sweet. It's a movie I saw when I was 11 years old, I think. It's very beautiful. I like Close Encounters of the Third Kind because it is able to actually point the complexity out. It's a very human film, and it goes for a spectacular finale, of course. But it also shows that it's not necessarily extraterrestrial. Close Encounters of the Third Kind has got this far bigger overtone of that whatever is going on here is trying to communicate with us at a very basic and fundamental level, and trying to somehow create almost a kind of the people who go there, the people who have been living there. It's like an exchange program of two intelligences, two advanced intelligences, which is very interesting. I like Communion, the film Communion, which is based on a Whitley Strieber book. Whitley is a very complex person. He is a horror writer. But I do think that his background as a horror writer, what he did with Communion transformed the field of UFO abduction stories. They made it far more personal, they made it far more haunting, but they also made it realize that it was far more complex than just E.T. abducting human beings and kind of making a genetic experiment. So those are, I think, the movies which are kind of like the most interesting one. And then there are the science fiction films of like Independence Day, who are obviously very, I would call them science fiction films because I think they to some extent use the UFO and the ET material to show that America is such a great nation that we can even vanquish ET by a Vietnam vet who all of a sudden kind of like jumps in an F-16, I think it is, and is able to destroy these evil aliens. It's a great movie. I kind of like, it's enjoyable, but it is a science fiction film, and it's called Independence Day. It kind of like shows you what they're trying to celebrate in that movie, and it's got very little to do with ET phenomenon as well. And then there are like the things like The Day the Earth Stood Still, War of the Worlds, all of those things, which I think are again more science fiction rather than anything to do with the UFO phenomenon as such. But yeah, if I would have to choose from all of those movies, the Contact is an odd one because she doesn't really get anything. It's not about UFOs, it's about this contact with this extraterrestrial intelligence through SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. So it's something of an odd one, but of all the other ones, probably E.T. and Close Encounters of the Third Kind are the ones which I think kind of like have my preference.
Both Spielberg movies. And then Spielberg goes off and does War of the Worlds and then loses me.
Well, and Spielberg has done very interesting things. There's very interesting comments to be made about Spielberg because he actually, well, if we go away from the big screen, actually the one thing which I would people for people who have lots of time, rent out or buy Taken. not the Liam Neeson film, but the Steven Spielberg miniseries, which I think is about 10 to 12 hours long. And it stars Dakota Fanning as a very young person who is like, and it goes through, you know, it's got the Roswell mythology in there. It's about chasing, it's about special children, of which she is one. But you know, the first time you listen to this and watch it, you kind of like just see it is. But then the second time when I watched it, you start to listen to Dakota Fanning doing the commentary, the voiceovers of obviously what the framework is, and there's so much beautiful and intelligent saying there on a metaphysical level, which has nothing to do with you know, alien creatures here. And the message which Steven Spielberg is doing is very much on a metaphysical level. He's saying that something else is going on. Spielberg has developed a reputation with having all of his movies end on an alien team, where they're appropriate or not, i.e. Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull story, which again has these aliens at the end. So that is very much a Spielberg kind of like obsession. There's you know, when you go into the UFO abduction field, it's actually becoming very interesting because there are people who have had these experiences, and definitely in the 1990s felt that they were somehow approached by an extraterrestrial intelligence and that they were part of this abduction fieldwork. It's interesting who you kind of like, you know, because it's a small circle, and it's interesting who you kind of like realize are then part of this group of these people who think so. But one person who is dead now was Michael Talbot, and he wrote a phenomenal book called The Holographic Universe, which he basically credited these intelligences with for supplying him with this information. You know, he said that he would never be able to come up with the concept of a holographic universe if it hadn't been for the experiences and the knowledge shared between him and these intelligences. He interpreted that, it's very hard because he died in the 1990s as well. So it's kind of like it's not really that well known, kind of like what he thought it was that was helping him along. But it's you know, on par with Terence McKenna, who says that the time wave zero mathematical formulas which he got were given to this other by this other intelligence. And Terence was always saying, like, you know, no, these UFOs are not nuts and bolts, for crying out loud, I have contact with them. They're like, you know, they're from this other reality which is here on Earth and has been here for thousands and thousands of years, and why don't you people get that? That was his like preoccupation, that why people didn't get that. And
But how are they communicating? How is a Terence McKenna, who was a genius, communicating with these intelligences? I mean, I understand his frustration, but you know, hey, help us out here a little bit. Tell us how you did it.
well, Terence would have told you that, you know, you just had to take drugs, and that would be the answer to that thing. But Terence was also the first to say that not everybody should take drugs. He felt that a person who was going to do this had to have training, as you know, like he had to be initiated. He felt that there had to be modern shamans who would be doing that on behalf of you and or a tribe and or a town or a, you know, a culture. So he wasn't at all a proponent of this, like, oh, let's just all do drugs and that'll be all okay. He also quickly realized that meditation disciplines or other kind of disciplines of the mind would be able to give you access to that as well. And he also recognized that it just happened haphazardly, in the sense that you might be somewhere walking around and you might come across this other intelligence, and that's how you had an encounter as well. So he kind of like, you know, he just encompassed quite a bit of the possibilities there.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of people now who claim to be channeling alien intelligences. And again, you know, that becomes a real mixed bag for me. You know, I look at the work of someone like a Talbot or a McKenna, and this is some brilliant, mind-blowing stuff. You know, and if they want to give away the credit for these extraordinary, you know, theories and books that they've written, to extraterrestrials, you know, God bless them. That's their option. I would also be curious as to how Michael Talbot was interacting with these intelligences. Is it a type of channeling? Is it something that they're getting in a meditation? Obviously, I get what McKenna is saying with, you know, being helped with various types of plant life, but where does that leave us with all these modern people now who claim to be the emissary of Nibiru? Or, you know, I mean, some of that stuff is, you know, you and I both know that some of it's wacky, okay? I mean, some of it just is not to be taken seriously. How do you know? How do we differentiate? Or am I wrong? I mean, is none of it wacky? Am I just too close-minded or too skeptical myself when it comes to this subject?
Well, I mean, when it comes to the channeling, not all of them can be true. There are, you know, some of it is mutually exclusive. So not all of the channels can be true. At least one of them, or a few of them, a percentage of them have to be wrong. And I think, you know, most of it is they kind of like hear a bell, but they don't really know where the clock tower is. And to kind of, you know, to Terence McKenna would probably say, like, these people haven't been trained enough. These people jump on conclusions which haven't been taken to what they should have been taken, or they are interpreting certain things too literally. And yeah, some of it is just invented. Some of them is just people who, you know they can get kind of like some attention to this, and some of it is just mistaken. So again, within that group of things, you have so many things going on there as well. But yes, with the channeling ET stuff, I think it's I think it's again it's on par with the kind of like the thing that UFOs are all extraterrestrial. They're trying to give a very simple explanation to a very complex thing, and I think people like that because they say, like, oh well, this person is able to channel that reality and this is the truth, so let's just settle on that. I unfortunately am always of the opinion that reality is far more complex than that, so I am skeptical as such that one entity would be able to pick somebody and kind of like say, well, you know, we have created this very complex life for you, but kind of like, you know, this person actually knows everything, so kind of like, you know, don't worry about it anymore.
But I do think that there is the potential to say that some people are receptors. Some people are receptive. Some people maybe are more capable of hearing this, whether it is a divine voice or an extraterrestrial voice of a different nature. And this kind of brings us full circle. You know, that there is intelligence out there that we do not understand. There are lights in the sky out there that we do not understand. And so for now, they will remain unidentified. But certainly, we're just scratching the surface of a gigantic topic, which we will be going into in much more detail in 2011, and hope to be having some really interesting guests on to talk about it. But in the meantime, happy birthday, my beloved. It's your birthday today, and I just wanted to say that to the whole world.
Thank you very much, and thank you for being with us here today on the first discussion of UFOs. Until next time, from the two of us,
The truth against the world.